Assalamualaikum dan selamat sejahtera. Anda sedang menonton Niaga Awal ini bersama saya Nabila Khalida dan rakan penyampai Nina Rosman. Apa khabar Nina?
Khabar baik. Selamat kembali Nabila.
Terima kasih. Saya suara saya lain sikit ni ya. Sebab yalah. Okey, kita teruskan saja dengan laporan yang pertama kita. Usahawan perusahaan mikro kecil dan sederhana PMKS memerlukan bantuan dalam bentuk subsidi kerajaan untuk memastikan sektor tersebut kekal berdaya saing dalam mendepani cabaran semasa. Menurut pengasas bersama Industries United, Datuk David Gurupatham, subsidi sedia ada ketika ini tidak begitu menyeluruh dan memerlukan pelaksanaan subsidi bersasar. Beliau berharap bajet 2023 yang akan dibentangkan tidak lama lagi dapat memenuhi keperluan golongan ini.
Katanya tekanan yang dihadapi usahawan PMKS ketika ini turut berganda kerana kos yang mungkin sebelum ini dapat dikurangkan menerusi pelaksanaan moratorium kini terpaksa kembali kepada keadaan biasa. Ia termasuk kos sewaan, pinjaman dan sebagainya.
So, pada ketika ini, challenges bagi PMKS ini adalah kos tinggi. Sekarang kita baru keluar daripada manpower shortage. Ya. Jadi, sampai bulan ini masih lagi ada isu tentang pekerja.
David berkata inisiatif yang lebih komprehensif dan berkesan seperti kadar cukai yang lebih rendah dan adil mungkin dapat membantu mereka. Pada masa sama, beliau turut memuji langkah Menteri Kewangan Tengku Datuk Seri Zafrul Tengku Abdul Aziz yang terlebih dahulu mendekati usahawan PMKS untuk menyelami permasalahan golongan tersebut. Tambahnya, sudah pasti langkah itu mampu memberi input yang tepat dalam menentukan bentuk bantuan yang akan dimasukkan dalam pembentangan bajet 2023 nanti.
Baik, cakap pasal cukai mungkin ramai yang tidak tahu di luar sana. Namun, kita ada beberapa perkongsian oleh rakan setugas kami iaitu Haritz Ashraf Hasdam untuk kongsikan beberapa data-data pecahan cukai yang ada di dalam negara kita. Silakan Haritz.
Okey, baiklah. Terima kasih Nina dan juga Nabila. Sudah tentu sebenarnya tak ramai orang suka nak bercakap berkenaan dengan cukai ini. Lagi-lagi kalau kita bercakap soal cukai pendapatan. Tapi itu faktanya yang perlu kita ambil tahu menjelang bajet 2023. Bukan sahaja cukai pendapatan tetapi bagaimana dengan cukai korporat, syarikat, bagaimana pula dengan cukai melibatkan petroleum dan sebagainya. Ini antara data-data ataupun angka penting yang perlu kita teliti. Pertamanya, ini mungkin agak cluttered ataupun nampak penuh sedikit di skrin di sini. Tetapi penting juga untuk kita faham di sini. Kerana selepas ini ada graf yang lebih mudah untuk anda faham. Pertamanya, apa yang penting untuk kita lihat di sini adalah dari segi kalau cukai, sama ada hasil cukai, cukai langsung, melibatkan cukai korporat, syarikat korporat, individu mahupun petroleum, serta cukai tidak langsung terus menunjukkan peningkatan sebenarnya dengan unjuran pada tahun 2022 ianya sekitar cukai tidak langsung dan dengan keseluruhan sekitar 234 trilion iaitu sekitar menyumbang kepada KDNK 14.3%. Ini untuk tahun 2022. Kalau kita lihat bagaimana daripada tahun 2020, 2021, angkanya mungkin agak menurun sedikit pada tahun 2021. Tetapi sudah jelas pandemik COVID-19 sedikit sebanyak menjejaskan dari segi purata kutipan hasil cukai. Dengan perubahan secara keseluruhan, kalau kita lihat penurunan pada tahun 2020 akibat pandemik COVID-19 telah turun negatif 14.9, negatif 1.8 pada tahun 2021 dengan unjuran akan kembali meningkat pada tahun 2022 iaitu 5.9%. Jadi kalau kita nak telitikan juga lain-lain dari segi angka bagaimana perubahan ataupun pecahan cukai ini dilaksanakan, SST sudah tentu antara yang menyumbang. Tetapi bagaimana kita nak memahami SST ini dari segi ketirisannya? Bagaimana kita nak pastikan kurangnya isu-isu ketirisan di dalam SST ini dapat ditangani? Pada masa sama, hasil petroleum juga antara yang mempengaruhi hasil petroleum pada tahun ini termasuklah apabila kita bercakap soal mata wang ringgit. Itu antara faktanya. Jelas, kerajaan perlu mencari dana. Dan kerajaan juga perlu berbelanja pembayaran subsidi berbilion ringgit seperti yang dinyatakan oleh Menteri Kewangan. Jadi ini antara pecahan kalau kita nak teliti dari segi hasil petroleum, cukai langsung melibatkan sama ada menerusi petroleum ataupun tanpa SST dan sebagainya. Okey, ini mungkin agak panjang ceritanya di sini. Tetapi secara umumnya, kalau kita nak bandingkan antara hasil petroleum dan bukan petroleum, kalau kita nak teliti, cukai langsung kecuali petroleum di sini menyumbang sekitar 49.3. Ini merupakan unjuran untuk tahun 2022. Unjuran tahun 2022 adalah 49.3, hampir 50% merupakan cukai langsung tanpa petroleum. Jadi dengan hasil petroleum dianggarkan sekitar 18.8 sahaja dan lain-lain ataupun kalau SST hanya 1.8 dan lain-lain 20.1. Ini pecahan-pecahannya melibatkan cukai ataupun unjuran yang dilakukan untuk oleh Kementerian Kewangan untuk tahun 2022. Baiklah, ini mungkin mudah untuk anda lebih fahami bagaimana perubahan ataupun kutipan 225 trilion sebenarnya pada tahun 2020, 2021 221 trilion dengan 2022 adalah 225. Bagaimana ini akan mempengaruhi ataupun apa yang mempengaruhi? Sudah tentu antaranya adalah cukai makmur ataupun windfall tax, one time windfall tax ini antara yang mempengaruhi ataupun bagaimana ianya mampu menyumbang kepada jumlah hasil kepada KDNK. Dan bercakap soal hasil, sudah tentu banyak perkara yang perlu kita teliti. Bagaimana perubahan-perubahan ataupun kutipan hasil ini mampu untuk memastikan bahawa tahap kewangan kerajaan terus mampan. Inilah persoalannya. Adakah akan ada cukai-cukai baru? Itulah persoalan-persoalan yang kita jangkakan, yang akan dibangkitkan sepanjang perbincangan kita dalam menjelang bajet 2023. Kembali bersama Nina dan juga Nabila.
Alright, thanks Harris. That's a very comprehensive presentation about types of tax and even the components of tax. And we want to talk about, I want to add one more. It's about last week, Finance Minister Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul Abdul Aziz said the government will continue to look into ways to widen the country tax, base as part of its medium-term revenue strategy. He said that the strategy is to ensure that Malaysia has sufficient revenue to expense for the country's development in the longer term. And to discuss further on this in conjunction with Budget 2023, with us virtually right now is Farah Rosli, Malaysia Tax Managing Partner at Ernst & Young Tax Consultant Sederian Berhad. So Farah, thank you for joining us this morning. Firstly, Farah, the fiscal deficit is expected to grow 6% next year with the expansionary budget in place and quite stagnant tax collection. So what is the key scenario we can predict?
Thank you. Thank you, Nina and everyone here. Looking at the fiscal deficit, it is actually looking at the spending versus the income of the country. And as mentioned by Harith earlier, the economy is projected to expand 5.5% in 2022. And it is actually driven mainly by strong rebound in consumption, especially the post-pandemic, the economy opened up and all that. But my view is then that Malaysia should also address the economic impact in the past 2 years by gradually rebuilding fiscal buffers through, of course, revenue collection, and one of them is taxes. And also, but also important is better spending and efficiency. So while there is surge in growth, the external headwinds as well as global uncertainties, especially with the current war and as well as the recurring effect of COVID-19 pandemic, which is still out there, may pose as a challenge. And in that sense, new taxes, if any, should encourage economic activity of the private sector. It's not just merely introducing new taxes, but should also go through a study and appropriate consultation with the industry to help support economic growth as well as sector growth. And the other bit that I would like to mention is also on SMEs. We also need to ensure that SMEs, they are not negatively affected or impacted by any new taxes if it's going to be introduced, as well as looking at SMEs, they actually contribute good economic growth, employment, of course, and of course, there is actually increased collection of personal taxes as well as indirect taxes. So overall, if you look at the deficit situation, there needs to be a balance in increasing tax revenue collection and encouraging industry and economic growth, as well as not to forget attracting investments, whether they are domestic direct investments or foreign direct investments.
All right. Let's move on to our next question. Our current tax collection over GDP is at the lowest in the region, and we're actually lower than any other country in Southeast Asia. And also that our tax revenue over GDP is now less than 11.4%. So how can we look into ways to widen the country's tax base as part of our medium-term revenue strategy?
Yeah, very good question, actually. The ratio of tax to GDP for the developed countries or members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or in short, OECD, is approximately 34%. Some foreign countries, more of the European and developed countries, it is also in a higher range of the 30%. Malaysia currently stands at 11.4%. If I recollect past years, it was about 12%. So it ranges between 11 to 13, 14%. So again, as I've mentioned earlier, there needs to be a balance between increasing tax revenue through higher taxes or even new taxes and the need to balance against achieving what I would say sustainable economic growth that prioritizes the welfare of the rakyat and drives the right behavior. Because tax, in a way, tax cuts, on the other hand, may increase budget deficit, mm-hmm. But taxation can also be a very good tool, and it is actually an effective tool, not just for the revenue collection of the government, but also influence the needed growth for the economy by, for example, incentivizing businesses, encouraging people to invest. For example, if you want to look at R&D or innovation, certain incentives or reliefs would encourage people or industry or businesses to move towards that, as well as not to forget developing the skills of the talent that we have, and again, attracting domestic and foreign direct investments. And the spillover effect or over sector growth is needed, and hopefully will not drive up deficits in the long run, because we are looking at the return to the economy by having the right growth in the right sector. And the other bit that I would like to touch is also, how do we ensure that all tax is being paid? It's important to make sure that people voluntarily pay taxes. Yeah. I recollect Harith said just now, not everyone likes to talk about taxes. And the term voluntary compliance is needed, because we need to recognize there are many aspects of the current tax system, and the taxpayers actually, because of the self-assessment system, make their own choices on reporting, calculating and payment of tax. So as long as the voluntary compliance choices remains, some of these choices will make sure then that you know, there is no shortage or underpayment of taxes. And also we want to make sure then that digital tax administration is also being looked at. And I can elaborate just very quickly that if the digital tax administration is embedded within the taxpayer natural systems, we will have a situation where more taxes can be collected from the same economy that we are looking at. Mm-hmm.
Farah, my question will maybe could spark a conversation or even debate among the conglomerate. Should we continue cukai makmur, the one-off windfall tax?
Cukai makmur, yes. My view, cukai makmur, it was introduced as a once-off measure, whereby companies will be charged a chargeable, where the chargeable income, if it's more than 100 million, they'll be taxed at 33%. The usual statutory tax rate is 24%, so there's an additional 9% for cukai makmur. And cukai makmur, if I remember back last year when this was mentioned, it was introduced in consideration of businesses that were performing relatively well. So there are many sectors that were impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, mm-hmm. but there were also sectors that were doing relatively better or even prospering during the pandemic situation. And as a temporary relief to the government's revenue, this additional tax will help elevate the government's revenue during the recovery period post-COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah. So in my view, Cukai Makmur, it is a once-off tax. I don't think it will be extended or it will remain. That's my view.
And the $1 million question is on GST, politically unpopular, but it's quite practical to have it now. Should we have reintroduced GST at a lower rate?
Another excellent point, a lot of discussion on the possible reintroduction of GST. That has been a topic of discussion. GST, it is a consumption tax, broad-based, and indeed will contribute to the revenue collection of the country. And not just Malaysia, many countries around the world has actually brought in GST into the system of VAT. But what I can say is then that the implementation and execution of GST must be done properly, and it should also, if it were to be introduced, I'm saying, and it must proactively address the issues faced under the previous GST regime. And GST, if GST is reintroduced, the implementation and compliance should be simplified. And I'm a proponent of making tax easier to be done. Therefore, this will encourage compliance of taxes. And of course, with minimal disruption to businesses. And if I were to mention the adequate time must also be given for businesses to prepare for the GST implementation. And there was a question I have been asked, what would be a right GST rate? I would say then that a possible GST rate of between 4 to 6% may be considered. The past GST rate was 6%, but it must be following an assessment on the potential revenue that can be collected to support the government in terms of additional tax revenue from GST. And the GST rate must also be reasonable and not burdensome to taxpayers and the business. So this evaluation needs to be done before any reintroduction of GST.
All right, we understand that some industries use tax break to further boost the recovery. So in your view, which sector should we give a leeway and which sector we should not?
In terms of sectors incentives, it's a bit of a debate, you know, whether incentives is needed, whether incentives will continue, should continue to be given to encourage investments and businesses. I would say that although incentives is not the only consideration for business or for investors, but incentives does provide a sweetener to businesses. And when I've had discussions with foreign investors, I would say mostly the question would be whether there would be any incentives, because if we don't provide incentives, our foreign country, the other countries, our neighbouring countries would also be providing incentives to encourage that type of investments into the country. So I see then initiatives to encourage foreign direct investments, foreign and also domestic investments should be there. And certain economic sectors, for example, those that contribute to the growth of the nation, to do with innovation, automation of processes, as well as upskilling and reskilling of talent, I think that would be good to have to encourage the overall economic growth. And also the other bit is then that, in my view, Malaysia should continue to support and incentivize strategic and sizable investments, which is flexible, and the package should be flexible and in a targeted manner. And this is actually to help those sectors, industries to grow and also to revitalize the economy. And the other bit is incentive to support investments in sustainability, for example, green initiatives, recycling of waste, perhaps energy saving initiatives, reducing carbon emission. All this can be considered. And I've mentioned earlier, incentives to enhance innovation and productivity, for example, tax breaks for R&D activities, research and development that will encourage innovation and creation of new ideas that will spur and encourage and catalyze economic growth. Yeah. The other bit, I would say, is in the last bit, I would say, is in that it is important also to measure outcomes and track the growth of the businesses or the economy that have been granted the tax incentive to ensure then that the incentives is actually achieving the desired goals that we want as a country.
Mm-hmm. Farah, automotive players are hoping for an extension of tax breaks for electric vehicles, EVs, and also SST exemption. How do we balance between collecting more income and helping industries to recover via tax break?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Always very good question on taxes. At current, there is 100% duty exemption for CBU, electric vehicles, yeah, until 2023. And for complete knockdowns, it is until 2025. And in my view, this will help play a role in developing Malaysia's EV industry. But the other bit I'd like to also touch on is then that there's also a need to have infrastructural support for EVs, such as essential charging stations. And this is to further develop the EV infrastructure, because although the incentive is already given for the the duty exemption, but the rest of the ecosystem also should be given the necessary support, and this is to develop the whole ecosystem and the overall economic growth of the sector will continue due to the tax exemption that's available. And the main aim is to ensure the growth of the sector and also the spillover effect of the industry is being felt and enjoyed by the value chain. So what I'm saying is that even if the import duty is given, it's not a matter of the cost for the government, but it's also important to look at the growth of the sector, the employment opportunity that's been given, the growth of the talent development, for example, as well as, again, the whole value chain of the industry is enjoying the benefit. And at the end of the day, Malaysia as a country will be able to feel the economic impact or the positive economic growth from such exemption that's been granted.
All right, Farah, in the coming leading to budget 2023, so what is your hope? What can we improve from the last year budget and the previous year? And what are your hope to improvement for this year budget?
I think we are having the effect of the recovery of the pandemic that we are in. We see a lot of the businesses have opened up, economic sector has opened up. But at the same time, we are still not totally out of the COVID-19 situation. There are some economies in the world, for example, China, that is still facing lockdown, and that could pose as issues with maybe supply chain. There's also geopolitical tension happening around the world. As we can see, the price of oil, etc., is there are also impact to that. I do hope the budget this year would provide, would incentivize certain sectors that we are looking at to encourage further growth and spillover effect to the economy that we want. The other bit is I do hope there will be some focus on talent development, upskilling, as well as reskilling. I think that's very important. As I speak to many businesses in different industry sectors, the need for the right skill for the right industry and business is very important. We can talk about automation or robotics, but at the same time, you still need the right talent and people to man those infrastructure or those equipment or even those plant and machinery. And the last thing I hope is then that we'll be able to actually support certain projects which would be beneficial to the country, whether it's domestic investments or whether it's foreign investors, will continue to be given encouragement, not just from a tax incentive perspective, but also from the overall environment to allow a conducive business environment to encourage growth of those businesses and the industry as well.
Mm-hmm. Alright, thank you so much, Farah Rusli, Malaysia Tax Managing Partner at Ernst & Young EY Tax Consultants Sdn. Berhad, for the explanations about tax base in Malaysia and to ensure country's development in the longer term. Thank you so much.
Apa je yang akan dibentangkan oleh kerajaan, kita mesti ambil tahu sebab kita nak tahu, kita sebagai rakyat, kita ada hak untuk dari segi apa yang kerajaan akan provide untuk kita. Jadi rugilah kalau kita tak ambil tahu, kita tak akan merasa pun apa yang kerajaan dah buat untuk kerajaan, untuk negara.
Baik, itulah segmen Borak Anak Muda bersama saya Nara Osman dan rakan penyampai saya Nabila Halida, di mana kami akan bersiaran setiap hari Isnin hingga Jumaat pada waktu jam 3.30 petang untuk membawakan anda beberapa isu yang dihadapi oleh anak-anak muda dan cadangan-cadangan solusi yang akan kami bincangkan dalam segmen Borak Anak Muda. Jadi berita seterusnya ialah golongan nelayan akui bantuan disalurkan kerajaan kepada mereka sebelum ini banyak memberi manfaat. Namun bagi bajet 2023, mereka berharap ada penambahbaikan bantuan dibuat ia bagi membantu meringankan beban yang ditanggung untuk meneruskan kehidupan, terutama ketika keadaan cuaca tidak menentu serta kos sara hidup yang semakin meningkat.
Menurut Nasim Mustafa, 55 tahun dan Muhammad Omar, 65 tahun, tambahan bayaran allowance kos sara hidup bantuan peralatan menangkap ikan wajar dipertimbangkan.
Kita minta kerajaan ni tambahlah menenai allowance sara hidup dalam RM300 ke sebulan. Sekarang ni RM200.5 ke, memang dah padanglah RM300 sebulan kan. Tapi cukuplah untuk tapung apa yang perlu.
Dengan kos sara hidup sekarang
lah. Dengan kos sara hidup sekarang lah.
Semakin meningkat kan?
Mungkin lah, memang semakin meningkat. Tapi bila kerajaan tambah sikit tu, kira ringan lah sikit beban nelayan.
Jadi dengan alat tu kita nak pakai modal sendiri tu pun tak mampu lah.
Jadi dengan bantuan?
Dengan bantuan tu jadi lain lah. Jadi boleh. Tak asuh dah, kata dah. Maknanya kalau kita kurang sikit pun, dia ada hak bantuan ni. Ni kalau tidak, kita pun kena buat pinjaman macam. Lepas sekarang ni, tahun ni dah nelayan tu yang paling, maknanya,
terjejah
lah. Daripada awal tahun sampai ni tak pernah lagi lah macam tahun ni.
Macam mana?
Ikan jadi kurang. Maknanya macam angin pun kuat, macam angin tak tentu lah. Tengok semalam pergi, dah lari balik. Dah berapa dah minyak? Minyak ada satu ton dah RM70. Kita tak dapat hasil ni. Minyak dah habis dah. Lepas hari ni pergi, angin berlemah. Awal semalam dia angin kuat, hari ni semua tak lepas minyak juga.
Sementara itu, Muhammad Khairul Samdan, 43 tahun dan Syed Abdul Halim Syed Abdul Rahman, 60 tahun, memohon agar kerajaan meluluskan lesen pukat bersesuaian di Zon A bagi membolehkan mereka menangkap ikan mengikut musim pembiakan.
Untuk buk-buk lesen sampang, Zon A, kalau boleh jenis pukat cukup bawah ni diluluskan lah. Kalau boleh. Benda pun tak masalah, tak persoalan ni pun, tapi jadi benda ni jadi kita nak ke laut ni kita takut. Ikan bawah nak ambil dengan mentega air tak boleh, pasti dengan pukat ataupun dengan pukat jeruk. Itu je cara dia. Tapi kalau boleh kajang suruhkan leseng untuk nelayan kita ni boleh menangkap ikan bawah.
Leseng tu nak mentok, leseng nak mentok dulu lah. Pasal bawah tu bila larak, buka kecek. Buka kaki, kita nak muka tak boleh. Buka besar tak boleh masuk larak. Tu. Nak mentok, dilulukan lah. Susah nak kawal muka bawah. Bila selalu muka, kena kejok pun. Asing luar, takat ikan tengah malang masuk darat. Lulu. Dapat tang Malaysia kita, nak ayu kita ni tak payah lah. Ke kapung ni, betul tak? Buka kecek. Takkan nak bayar duit, tak ada. Buka ambil, buk ambil, habis ambil. Tadi nak beli mana pula.
Mereka berharap bajet 2023 memberikan berita gembira buat golongan nelayan yang turut terkesan akibat pandemik COVID-19 sebelum ini.